Hello, this is Ben Brenna from Modern Self-Protection, and you're listening to the Politics and Guns Show, the only show that requires a seatbelt. Make sure you got yours on tight, keep your hands and arms inside the vehicle at all times, and wait till it comes to a complete and full stop before you get up.
One, fire!
This podcast is featured on the Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom.
Hi, and welcome to the Politics and Guns podcast for Monday, the 22nd of July, 2013. I'm Paul Lathrop.
Hi, and I'm Toby, and on tonight we have another politics roundtable.
So climb aboard.
Strap in.
And hang on. Episode 145 of the Politics and Guns podcast starts right now.
Thank you for downloading, subscribing, and listening to the Politics and Guns podcast, where we focus on anything affecting the Second Amendment and our other freedoms. We are a listener-driven show and love getting your feedback. If you would like to get in touch with the show, there are several ways you can do that. You can call 605-215-1438 and leave a voice message. You can send any of the hosts an email by sending the mail to the first name of the person you are trying to reach at politicsandguns.com. Or you can comment on any of the show's episodes at politicsandguns.com or on the show's Facebook page at facebook.com/politicsandgunspodcast. And now, on to the show.
Hey, and welcome back. Well, Toby, it's been a while since you and I have talked, even over the phone, man. How's things been going for you?
Busy. Super busy. We're busy at work. It seems like when it gets really hot out, all you truck drivers start whining and complaining that your APUs aren't putting out enough coolness. So we're getting you guys fixed up at work. Then we've had this, I mentioned before, my cousin got married, and the wedding was this weekend. And so we had the wedding, we had the rehearsal, the wedding, and then the reception. And I was pretty wiped out after that, so I slept in today and then spent the rest of today smoking cigars, drinking beer, and reading Glenn Tate books.
There you go.
All at the same time. I was multitasking.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all.
No, it was kind of a laid-back day. How about you? You've been on the road quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. I've been just finished a load. I went down to San Diego with a load out of home and then grabbed a load out of L.A. and ran it up to where I'm parked now, which is just outside of DeKalb, Illinois, or about 60 miles west of Chicago. So been really moving the freight. Got to meet in person again. It's not the first time I've met him in person, but got to... have dinner with Rob Morse while I was down in San Diego.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, and you'll hear him on the politics roundtable here in just a little bit. But had a great time down there, and it turned out that I unloaded and was parked for the night about 3 miles from his house. So it was great to be able to see him in person, and then just been. Hauling the freight, trying to get things delivered and get bills paid.
Well, thanks for keeping the economy rolling.
Yeah, well, I do my itty bitty tiny little part. So, the other thing, a couple things business wise, we did change the numbering system on the shows. Y'all noticed, I'm sure, that it went from episode 104E. to episode 144 that Brian released as the midweek show last week. And that was because there were several people that said, you know, we just can't keep track of them as easily, especially if you have more than one midweek show, if you're labeling them A, B, C, and so on. And so, you know, I've always said we're a listener-driven show. what the listeners want, the listeners get. And so we went ahead and changed the numbering system. So I've always thought myself, since we went to the two shows a week format, that the weekend has really been the main show, the one show that I really wanted to knock things out of the park with, that that I wanted just, you know, really, really, really good stuff on. And I'm still that way. If we put out more than one show a week, the Sunday one is the one I'm going to put the most emphasis on. But of course, I want them all to be very good. But I put my most effort into the weekend show. So,
yeah, it seems like everything else in the week is just kind of bonus stuff. There's a whole lot going on in the world these days, and it's hard to keep it down to just, you know, an hour or two once a week. Some weeks we've got enough to fill up every day, and other weeks, you know, we got just a few shows.
Yeah. Well, and this week I am, you know, we've already got a show. All that has to be recorded is the open and close. We've got a midweek show ready to go. We've got a new, and I think you folks will like this, and it's going to be, I think, one of the exceptions to the weekend show is what is really, really, really good, because you and I and Stick sat down, and we've actually recorded a series of these survival corners, and the first one of those airs on the midweek show this week, and I know you have to go just by memory. You didn't edit them, but I really had a good time recording those, and I learned a lot.
Oh, I always enjoy talking to Sticks. I mean, we haven't known him very long, but he's just one of those guys that once you've met him and you get to know him, you feel like you've known him forever. And we could literally talk for hours. In fact, the show that him and I soloed together, I had like almost five hours of raw audio I had to get edited down to like 45 minutes.
Wow.
Well, we just, you know, it's like you and I off air. We get to talking about this, that, and the other, and he's got, there's so many facets to him. You know, it's not just survival, not just guns. So I always enjoy talking to Sticks. I'm very happy that he's come aboard.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think he's a great addition to the show. So that's kind of the catch up. I do want to, before we go off to do the politics roundtable, there were two instances last week where our new sponsor, ABN Army Surplus, where their ad didn't run through a couple. It was just accidental. It wasn't intentional.
One was my fault. I'm sorry. It was late night editing, and I missed one. My bad.
That's
my apologies.
But I do want to mention we just got off the phone with Gary of ABN Army Surplus, and we're going to do a little bit of what in the business is called a make good. We're going to do a regularly recorded, pre-recorded promo that you're going to hear late in the episode, but I want to touch on ABN Army Surplus because, you know, they really have stepped up to the plate, and they're being great sponsors for us. They, right now, we talked to Gary just a little bit ago, and they've got a special going on for MREs. And normally, I don't honestly know their normal price, but I do know they have on sale for one case of MREs. That's 12 MREs. They're on sale for $75. If you buy 5 cases, that drops. If you buy 10 cases, it drops more. And I'm not supposed to give out over the air how much, but it is significant. It is a big deal. Matter of fact, when I get paid on Monday, I'm probably sending Susan down to the store. So,
you know, in MREs, and I actually, when I was in the Air Force, I enjoyed eating them. Call me crazy, but there's some pretty good choices then. But they're very filling, a high caloric content, because, you know, I mean, they're designed for soldiers out in the field where you're going to be active and you have to survive. And for the truck driver specifically, they don't take up a lot of space, and that's, I know you guys carry a little bit of your own food around, but to have even in your car or in a semi truck, say if you got stranded somewhere, you know, I remember one winter that they had to shut down the interstate, and there's a lot of people stuck there.
Yep.
And, you know, if you can't just hop, if you're not close enough to an exit that has a store sitting right there, you got to eat what you got with you. So just something like that on hand doesn't take up much space. They come in durable packages, and, you know, they'll definitely keep you alive. And they come with a little bit of everything.
Absolutely.
From beginning to end, right down to the toilet paper.
Yep. So what I'd like everybody to do, if you don't mind, the phone number for ABN Army Surplus is area code 605-357-8855. Again, that's area code 605-357-8855. Give them a call. The per case price is a pretty good price, even at $75. But call and find out how much the volume discount is. You're going to be amazed at how cheap these things get when you buy in bulk. They can ship anywhere in the world. And their shipping prices are pretty good. So give them a call. Tell them the Politics and Guns podcast sent you.
Also, they are almost at 1,000 likes on their Facebook page.
Yep. As I read this, they are at 996 likes. Let's get them pushed up over 1,000. Go to facebook.com/ABN Army Surplus. Alpha Bravo November. Army Surplus. And let's get them pushed well over 1,000. We ought to be able to do that fairly easily by morning. When Gary walks in, he ought to be able to see a huge bump, I'm hoping. Yeah, if you've got Facebook, head on over and give him a like.
Hey, now, we were talking a little bit earlier about some of the products that they wear, and you were telling me about one that I thought would be rather valuable. You know, as I mentioned, I work around these truck drivers, and sometimes these guys, I don't know if they can see me, but I swear they're gunning for me, and you're telling me about a vest.
Yep.
That would be rather handy and could possibly save me from getting squished by a driver with his eyes shut.
Well, yeah. Well, and you got to remember these. I mean, honestly, the long nose Pete's, the Freightliner Classics, the ones with the long, tall hoods. If you walk directly in front of them, sometimes we cannot see you. But yeah, ABN. One of the things I'm going to be buying there very, very soon. They have a full line of 511 Tactical, or 511, however you want to say it. And they have, as part of that line of 511 Tactical, they've got a reflective safety vest that has got pockets galore. And I think their regular price on that thing, not a sale price, their regular price is only $40. And the quality of the manufacturer, believe me, I've looked at them close. That is one of the first things I wanted to get when I brought my wife there and told her we were going to be carrying as a sponsor of the show. And I told them I wanted to pick that up simply because I've got basically a plastic safety vest. You know, as truckers, we have to wear these vests all the time. And I've got basically a plastic safety vest that slips over your shirt or slips over your jacket. That darn thing in a truck stop costs $15. Well, you know, the $40 511 Tactical is going to last forever, and it's got pockets galore in the thing. So, I really want one.
Now, admit it, Paul. When you went in there, you were like a kid in a candy store, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and then they've got, I mean, everything from, they've got the modular army tents, you know, the big suckers that you can set up a headquarters in. They can be heated and air conditioned. They've got two of those things. They were only, I mean, now this is something you're going to want to be in the Sioux Falls area to be interested if you're interested in them. But they were only $1,500.
And you can heat and air condition them, huh?
Yep.
That sounds like the way my dad camps. I think the last time he. Last time my dad went camping, and this will give you an idea about how long ago it was, he took the TV and VCR.
There you go.
And that was roughing it for him.
There you go. Well, hey, man, we're running a little long on the segment here, so why don't we go ahead and step aside, and we're going to run that politics roundtable. Yep. And then you and I will come back and close the show up.
Great. Stay tuned, everybody. More stuff to come.
Slipstream Weapon Lubricant was the result of an exhaustive search by former military men who were unsatisfied with the current commercial firearm lubricants. No lubricants on the market passed Crusader Weaponry's tests. They found a combination that did. By combining the best synthetic lubricants with advanced nanoparticles, they were able to achieve results better than any they had hoped for. No one else in the firearms industry has a lubricant this effective. Slipstream Weapon Lubricants have been used by members of the armed forces in all branches around the world. Those that have used Slipstream trust nothing else to keep their weapons running when they need them the most. Go to CrusaderWeaponry.com to order Slipstream Weapons Lube and use the promo code 4POLITICS at checkout. That's numeral 4POLITICS to get $2 off shipping for your order. This part of the show is brought to you by the New Jersey Second Amendment Society. The NJ2AS has been working hard in New Jersey to fight for our constitutional rights and has been having some real successes. Between Operation Establish Compliance and Frank Fiammingo's work fighting bad gun laws in the legislature and their new urban outreach program, positive things have been happening in New Jersey. They do need more help. They need you to become a member. A strong membership shows that they have a strong voice and can deliver results. So won't you please go to www.nj2as.com and become a member today. It is only $35 for a one-year membership, and since there are no paid staff at NJ2AS, every penny of your membership goes to fight the fight in New Jersey. Hey, and welcome back. Well, this is our second Politics Roundtable. Joining us again this time is Laura Carno. Laura is, of course, a resident of Colorado and the lady behind IamCreatedEqual.com. And Rob Morse is with us. Rob is the purveyor of the Slow Facts blog, which is linked up at, actually both sites are linked up at politicsandguns.com. Thanks both of you for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Well, to get started then, the one topic that's been the most talked about really in the past couple weeks is the Zimmerman verdict. Trial came to an end. The jury came back and decided that that Zimmerman really acted prudently, I guess is the best way to put it, and that was justified in his actions. And I guess a lot of the people in the NAACP, the activists, are not that thrilled with it and are now calling for the federal charges for civil rights violations against Zimmerman and are calling for the end of Stand Your Ground laws. I guess if I could, for both of you, could I have you talk about what your thoughts are on the Zimmerman verdict and especially that, you know, that the other side just doesn't seem to want to let this end.
Yeah, and I'll take the purely political side. I know that Rob has more expertise on the law side. But from a purely political standpoint, if the president and the attorney general were really, really concerned about young African-American men dying as a result of violence, they would be focusing on Chicago, Detroit, D.C., places like that where the numbers are big, and not a situation where, even according to the FBI, race didn't seem to be a factor at all.
I agree 100%. That makes perfect sense to me. The issue that I see with the laws is that the laws were basically ignored. A bunch of pundits and activists didn't get the verdict they wanted. Now, one can argue about what verdict they really wanted, and then they used this verdict as a platform to really issue some ill-informed opinions. Black people, our inner cities are a place of violence. Our inner cities have large minority populations. They are the most frequent victim, and to tell them that they must back up, and unless they've, you know, turned and run and abandoned their family and their homes, under all circumstances, they can be prosecuted. That to me sounds like excess prosecution. there is a point, and anybody who's taken firearms training knows it. Yes, if you've got a way to back out of a situation, take it. Everyone's taught that.
Sure.
People who argue that that firearms owners are aggressive, you know, probably have never taken any training.
Well, and Rob, if you even step back to before the arrest of George Zimmerman,
mm-hmm.
when the police said there really is no standing to even arrest and charge him.
Right. Right.
And the local authorities didn't do the charge until they were pressured by the White House and the Justice Department. So you look at this whole thing and you say, yes, there were firearms laws and when can you act in self-defense? There are all those questions, but surrounding the whole thing is this political question of why was he arrested and why is Washington butting in to local affairs?
Well, they convened a special prosecutor to charge him because the Sanford police wouldn't. The Sanford police chief, I think, is this a question whether he jumped or was pushed? He quit or was fired. It's not clear because he said there's no case here.
Yeah. And going back, and this gets into the actual tactical usage of the firearm and the actual physical events of that night. But what came out in the trial, basically, I can only see one thing that I could say that George Zimmerman could have done better, and was not legally required to do this, but people that have taken training that I have spoken with almost to a person have said that he did a fairly poor job of when he was out of his vehicle and the instance came where Trayvon Martin appeared and said, "Do you have a problem with me?" and was very close. At that point, he should have assumed a command voice and basically back away in a very loud voice and that kind of, but that's the only thing I could find that anybody has said that Zimmerman has done that they wouldn't have done exactly the way he did, if that makes sense.
And there's no way of knowing if he hadn't drawn his firearm, would he have been killed? And I think that's the would he, George Zimmerman, have been killed? That's the big question, and that's always there in a self-defense situation. When you are protecting yourself, what did you actually stop? Would you have escaped with your life or not? And we'll just never know the answer to that question.
No,
we have the right to defend ourselves.
There are fatal beatings all the time. How big of one do you have to take? And that's why the presumption of innocence is so important. You don't want to be the one that throws the first blow. We should probably move on. But the notion of you're going to use a command voice. Now, maybe if you do that as you're backing up, I understand mm-hmm. that law enforcement uses that to control the situation. In this case, you know, there are times in arguments that command voice can get you into trouble just as much as it can get you out. So it's such a tough call.
Oh, sure. And I don't want to say that George Zimmerman did anything wrong. And I don't think anybody can say George Zimmerman did anything wrong because he's been acquitted and none of us were in his shoes that night.
Right.
I was just bringing up the fact that I've talked to a lot of people about this and I've only found one area where some people said they might have done something different.
Yeah. It's a tragedy and we all wish it had turned out differently.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, why don't we go ahead and move on to our next topic? Because I agree, we kind of have covered this. Other than have you folks noticed, other than the demonstrations out and about where everybody's calling for the end of Stand Your Ground laws, which are really a good thing, my opinion at least, in that you don't have to show your back to an armed attacker. Has there been a lot of talk of, including the president saying we'd like to take a look at ending your stand your ground laws. I haven't seen myself anything where that's started to come to fruition yet.
No, I think it was proposed. Well, it was proposed in Florida by some people who demanded a meeting with the governor in Florida, and he said, "I'll consider it." I did. No.
That's perfect. And I'm not hearing anything in our part of the country here either. All I have heard is the president injecting himself into the national discussion and saying that we should take a look at that when it actually wasn't much of an issue in the Trayvon Martin case.
No, he couldn't stand his ground because he was on his back. When the shot was fired, Zimmerman was on his back. There was no way to retreat. So, I don't know. And
well, Paul?
Yeah.
And Laura, I think there is one other issue we could touch on that. So a young woman's accosted at night in her car. She has to leave the safety of her car and abandon that. She cannot defend herself. She's in her own apartment. She must abandon the apartment, go out a window if possible, rather than defend herself in her own home at night from a stranger. Is that what we're proposing?
And the way that that's
the bleeding edge of stand your ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the way that you position that, Rob, makes it sound like the rights of the perpetrator, the bad guy, are more important than the rights of the victim, because in that situation, she should be doing whatever it takes to keep herself safe, and depending on what sort of a threat this bad guy is, she should have all of those choices at her disposal.
Well, and one other thing maybe we should touch on is this, that the people that are the most helped by these laws, by the Stand Your Ground laws and by the deregulation of all other firearms laws, are the people that are disadvantaged, are the people that are, well, let's just face it, don't live in the greatest areas of their cities and might be in a higher crime area. The people that are going to be hurt the worst are the people that are the core voting block of the Democratic Party, which is not all the time, but generally who we see going after the gun rights.
That sounds like a segue.
It does, doesn't it? Well, and we are coming up a little bit close to the break here. Why don't we do this? Why don't we go to step aside, do a break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about that and some other topics. So hang on, everybody. We'll be right back right after this.
Nighthawk Custom Training Academy in Centerton, Arkansas believes people who own guns should hold themselves to a higher standard. Their aim is to assist gun owners to achieve that gold standard and then maintain it through regular instruction and target practice. They are not a public shooting range. Instead, they use their shooting range in conjunction with their training academy to bring renowned competitive and educational shooting opportunities in for serious gun enthusiasts of all experience levels. Monthly, they offer classes such as CHL and basic gun handling, along with USPSA and IDPA competition matches. Their signature annual Nighthawk Custom Challenge IDPA match is a can't miss, and Ruger Rimfire Challenge state matches are family-friendly events enjoyed by young and old at all levels of experience. They host classes for guest instructors such as Masad Ayub, Rangemaster, DTI, and others throughout the year. Private lessons are available, and group lessons and events can be accommodated as well. Go to NighthawkCustomTraining.com or call 479-886-7280 to find out what is available.
Hey, and welcome back. Continuing the conversation, we have Laura Carno and Rob Morse with us. I guess, Laura, I'd like to focus on Colorado's been getting a lot of news lately. Apparently that the recall elections, there are now two that have been given a date, and it looks like that's actually going to happen in September, right?
Correct. It's September 10th, and it will be for the recalls of Senate President John Morse, no relation to our Rob Morse on the line, and Senator Morse is in Colorado Springs, and also Senator Angela Herron, and she is in Pueblo. So both of those recalls are going forward. They've been through some court challenges. The senators are not going to pursue a Supreme Court challenge, and that allowed the governor to set a date of September 10th. Now, late breaking news on Sunday evening, there was a press release from the Morse and Heron camps that said they're going after criminal charges against the petition gatherers, saying there were X number of fraudulent petitions. Now, if that were the case, the appropriate place to do that is with the Secretary of State 2 months ago, and they did not do that. So it's just another stall tactic and just another place for them to be able to say, our district attorney in this case is a Republican, for them to be able to say, here's again another Republican who didn't pursue this and that sort of thing. So that's where we are, but there's one Republican candidate that's on the ballot to replace Senator Morse, and one who's on the ballot to replace Angela Heron. And in the case of Senator Morse's race, there were a couple of people interested. The Republican Party did sort of a mini internal primary just with the district leadership, and so that there would only be one person on the ballot. So that's all going forward, and we're excited that those voters get to have their day at the ballot box. They've certainly earned it.
Absolutely. Now, if I was reading earlier, and I don't know if this is true or not, but because it was in a forum post, but I was reading, somebody was saying that Senator Morse was going to be term limited anyway, that this was going to be his last year as a senator. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And that's one of the most common questions that the recall committee got when they launched this. Why don't you just let him finish out his term? So there are a couple answers to that. One is, he didn't get everything he wanted in the last legislative session. And just as a reminder to your listeners, Senator Morse was a very moderate Democrat. You wouldn't have been able to guess from his legislative agenda for the previous terms that he'd been in there, you wouldn't have been able to guess that he was a Democrat. He's former law enforcement. He had some good pro-police bills, pro-military bills. He even sponsored in 2007 a reciprocity bill for concealed carry holders for Colorado, a very pro-gun bill. Mm-hmm. This spring, when New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg started spending his money in Colorado, Senator Morse changed. And so it's a little bit bigger picture than just the gun laws. He changed when his constituents said, and by the way, not just Republicans, independents and Democrats as well, when they said, hey, Senator, we don't like how you've changed, he just ignored them. And that's what threw them over the edge. You have to listen to your constituents, and we need to be represented by somebody who actually represents our views. So there's that piece of it that he's just not done yet with everything he wanted to do. And the second piece is we want this to also be a message to the pro-gun legislators across the country, many of them Democrats, who are currently being attacked by Bloomberg's money and thrown into primary challenges and different things like that based on them standing up for our Second Amendment rights. And we want to be able to send that message across the country that you need to represent your constituents. So those are the two reasons that it's not okay to let him just finish his term.
Okay, very cool. So September 10th, now there's going to be an election in these two communities. Is there any other delaying that can be done, or is this pretty much set in stone?
It's set in stone. I'm not an attorney, but attorneys tell me it's set in stone. And I think the filing on Sunday evening, or the release of a press release, I should say, saying that they're going to go after signature gatherers criminally, that's not something that would delay the election. They're just trying to get more press for their side.
Okay.
Paul, can I toss in some comments?
Sure.
I mean, it's almost comic relief to me, because here we've got some Democratic legislators in Colorado saying, do you know there were fraudulent petition signatures gathered? I mean, that is the pot calling the kettle black.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, they have enough money to throw money at lawyers. That would that it's part of the full, I think that's part of the Reinvestment Act now. We're funding lawyers. but watch what happened. They infringed the citizens' civil rights with these overreaching gun laws, and they did it for political gain. And they didn't just say, "Well, you know, this is an important vote to me. It's a matter of personal commitment." They basically said, and Morse told other legislators, "Well, for things like this, you need to ignore your constituents." Holy cow! Talk about an imperial legislature.
Oh yeah.
And you're exactly right, and that was one of the straws that broke the camel's back. Not only did he tell publicly, he said that on national cable news, that that's what he was telling his senators, was to ignore that feedback. But when there were over 10,000 people at the state legislature to testify against these bills, he orchestrated it so that 7 bills went through 2 committees in one day, and almost nobody got to speak their mind. So cutting off public process is not okay with the citizens of his district.
Well, Laura, what's kind of exciting is we had an arrogant legislator, you did, and bless your heart, you've got northern counties threatening secession and secession, and you've got these recalls. I'm glad Colorado didn't lay down.
Colorado didn't lay down, and on a slightly more amusing note, there's a small town in Colorado that is considering issuing licenses for citizens to shoot down drones.
Oh, I love that.
I saw that. That was a stitch.
So they're getting some flack from the feds, and I won't weigh in on that story, but it's just amusing.
Someone's got to come up with a line of hunting gear to hunt drones.
There we go. Well, and the other legal thing going on in Colorado right now is 55 out of the 64 county sheriffs are enjoined in a lawsuit to overturn these laws, saying that they're unconstitutional and unenforceable. And when you add up 55 out of 64, there are Democrats in there. This is not a Republican versus Democrat argument. This is the people's rights to choose their own form of self-defense versus the government telling them what they must or must not do.
Right. I think the phrase was unenforceably vague.
Yes.
Absolutely. I would like to mention one thing about the, you know, and this is more national and definitely not gun related, but one of the things that's constantly fought against, and this one is exclusively by Democrats, is voter ID laws. And a thought occurred to me that, you know, if voter ID laws were in effect, that the fraud allegations would be extremely tough to prove because, well, when you check somebody's ID, they are who they say they are. So.
Right. And these fraud allegations are in the petition gathering process. They're claiming that petition gatherers misrepresented things, you know, why the recall was happening. And, you know, what's interesting about that is that the recall committee and, you know, those of us on the phone are as interested in not having fraud as anyone. And so if they can absolutely prove fraud, we're interested in that too. But they can't. So it's just another stall tactic. It's just another political ploy to try and paint the recall supporters as, you know, not just as people concerned about the quality of their government, but as people who will do anything to get their way, and that's just not accurate.
Sure. So I'm guessing I know this is totally non-gun related, but it is absolutely politics related. And I didn't put this on the suggested topics, but I just wanted to touch on this a little bit since I brought it up. I'd be interested in both of your ideas on this. I am absolutely 100% pro voter ID laws. I think it's the easiest way to stop voter fraud. And I was just wondering what you folks thought of them, and is there a way that it can be pulled off where it's not
the modern day version of a poll tax.
Yes. I heard James O'Keefe speak on Wednesday. James is a, I'll call him a guerrilla journalist.
Mm-hmm.
He's, the guy goes, I don't need a TV station. I have YouTube. Let the media react to me. He put his right arm in a cast, walked into the Attorney General Eric Holder's polling place and said, do you have Eric Holder's ballot? And they go, oh yes, Mr. Holder. Now notice James never claimed he was, he goes, you know, they go, well, you know, I can't sign because my hand's in the cast. He goes, oh, we'll sign for you. He goes, well, how can you match that against signatures? And the poll person, the person manning the poll goes, oh, we never check. Well, you know, politicians can claim a lot of things and the world's simplest video can put their claims to a lie.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the one thing when I read about that, that was actually during the election cycle that just passed. But, the one thing I loved about that was his quote was he was going to go get an ID, but he says, I'll be back faster than you can say furious.
You know, and the other thing, it brought to mind the other day, a friend of mine got a fishing license for himself and his son. They were going to go up to the mountains and go fishing. And he had to provide a driver's license and a second form of ID to get his fishing license. And I don't hear cries of people saying I'm being disenfranchised from being able to get a fishing license.
That's obviously racist.
Obviously. And so, you look at whenever there's a problem with a law, can we look at the one or two instances where there might be an issue of disenfranchisement, see if an executive in that area can make a smart decision on who, if the person is who they say they are, even if they don't have ID, rather than making the entire system so open to fraud. So I think that the disenfranchisement argument does not hold water, and it's just a way to make sure there's fraud in the system. So I'm in complete agreement with you, Paul.
Okay. Well, and then one other topic that we wanted to get to is, and Rob, you kind of touched on this, is I was in the topics I had thought up for before we did this was kind of how we get traction in the old media, so to speak, the traditional newspapers, television, and radio. But I think you gave the answer there, Rob, is we just don't try, that we go around them. Is that, or is there a way we can get positive traction in the old style media?
Yes, there is, but I think the answer is the same in both cases. Rather than plead at the door of my local TV station to say, please cover me fairly. A case in point is I have a local sheriff who says, that he is required to have a may issue policy for concealed carry. My reading of the law is that is at his discretion that he has to have, can have a may issue policy. Well, you know, if we started covering all the people that were victims of crime and violence in our county, just interviewed them, put it on YouTube time after time after time, the media would come to us. The sheriff would be reacting to us rather than us pleading for these issues to get attention. I'm a guy who likes words. I write. Well, I think it's about time I learned a new trick and you know, jumped into the video world, because that's the media world we're in.
Sure.
You know, I think the other thing is the way that we speak about the firearms issue, the self-defense issue. And you all know this. We're in the gun world. I know that we've all been in for decades. We speak to one another about the Second Amendment with particular words. We talk about the Constitution, the Second Amendment, what we think its original purpose was, and all of that kind of thing. But we have to come to the conclusion that most people don't care about it in the same way with the same words as we care about it. That people sure do care about the government not butting in and telling them what to do. They sure care about women being able to protect themselves and people in inner cities being able to protect themselves. So to the extent that we can speak about our issues in ways that are relevant to people who don't like politics as much as we do and don't follow the gun issue like we do, the better the chance the standard traditional media is going to cover it, because then it sounds relevant to their viewing audience, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we're coming up on another break here. I'd like to have you both hold on for just one more segment if we could. We'll be right back right after this.
This part of the show is brought to you by Beads, Bullets, and Bows. Beads, Bullets, and Bows is your source for earrings, necklaces, bracelets, and keychains, mostly made from recycled cartridge cases, and all lovingly handcrafted by my beautiful wife. With a wide assortment of styles, you're sure to find something for the gun-loving ladies in your life. You can find Beads, Bullets, and Bows at facebook.com/beadsbulletsbows, and there is a link on the Facebook page to take you to the online shop where you can order direct. So please, enjoy the show, and head on over and take a look at Beads, Bullets, and Bows.
Hey, and welcome back for our final segment of the Politics Roundtable. Well, Rob, we talked about Colorado recalls last segment, but you've got some laws that have been passed by the legislature that are sitting on Governor Moonbeam, Governor Brown's desk there in Sacramento. Any word on what's going on with those?
Well, the gun rights organizations in the state have asked us to contact the governor and ask him to veto those laws. And the language they're using is very much one of civil rights. You know, defend our rights. These are bigoted laws that will infringe strongly on innocent gun owners. I don't know how effective will be, because I don't know how many Democrats think that civil rights exist as applied to gun owners. Fortunately, there are a great number of laws that didn't make it all the way through the legislative process. Some were withdrawn by their submitter. Some made it through one house or one committee but did not make it all the way through the legislative process. The bad news is that many of them will be reconsidered when the legislature comes back in the fall. So this fight's not over. It's going to be long. We've been asked to call again and again. Many of us have. I think we're seeing activist fatigue. And we've voiced a concern. I've spoken to legislative aides that are receptive to our point of view, and they say, you know, you're just a number. And if we only get 10 calls on a topic, you're not much of a number. My impression, and I think you're going to talk to Frank Fiammingo from Illinois, from New Jersey.
Yep.
And the guys who were recently active in Illinois. I think unless you pretty much stop his office because you've flooded the phone lines, unless you've made that big of an impression on the legislator, I don't know that one or, you know, a couple dozen phone calls has that much of an effect.
Well, and maybe, and just, you know, blue skying this, yeah, what is happening in Colorado can have a positive effect all over the country.
Maybe it'll get us Laura?
Absolutely. I mean, that's our hope, is that the stand that we're taking in Colorado spreads to other parts of the country and, you know, emboldens people who may not have felt comfortable sticking up for themselves and their rights in states like New Jersey and California, where it's slightly less popular to be pro-gun.
Right.
Sure. Well, then, let's I guess to sum that one up, if you live in California, you've got to be on the phone to the governor's office.
Right.
You got to be sending emails. And when I was talking with a, and this has been a while back, but I was talking with a aide for my representative in Congress. And one thing that gets overlooked is if you've got the fax number for that office, those faxes have to be recorded. Phone calls can be tallied, but faxes get filed.
Interesting.
And so the fax can be an extremely effective, if you've got a fax machine, it can be an extremely effective method of communication with your representatives. I don't know the, governors or the state of California or Colorado. I don't know anything but South Dakota where I live, but I know it's extremely effective when dealing with my representatives and that are representing me in South Dakota, both at state and the federal level. So,
well, Paul, anybody with a computer can get access to effectively send a fax.
Apps, well, there are apps, web apps that can do it, right?
Right. They're online sites that if you want to send a Second Amendment fax to your governor, I'm sure they can find a way. You just have to, you know, do a web search to find it.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, let's, if we could then, for the remainder of the time we have, let's go ahead and I'd like to go back into the new media aspect of it because, well, all of us are in one way or another involved. Rob, you write the blog. Laura's into YouTube, and I do the podcast. Is there, I guess, other than word of mouth, is there a way we can grow our audience, or is that going to be something that just happens naturally and organically?
And I think that's the benefit of tools like Facebook and Twitter, that if you have good content, like Rob was talking about with James O'Keefe, some of his videos that go viral, those are the places it goes viral. So for very little money, you know, James O'Keefe needed to put a cast on his arm and do some things that cost a little money. But he was able to show how poorly in Eric Holder's voting area that the voter ID laws worked. So, and that can get shared on Facebook and retweeted on Twitter and go everywhere in the country and worldwide very, very quickly. So I'm a big fan of social media to do that, whether it's your podcast or my YouTube or Rob's blogs. Any of those things can be amplified significantly on social media.
Laura, do you remember, I forget how the Colorado legislator's name is pronounced. Is it Diane DeGette?
Diana DeGette.
It's a hard G. DeGette.
Hard G.
She had this wonderful quote that she handed us. And it was basically, don't worry about being able to defend yourself. The police will come, but you'll probably be dead by the time they get there. I mean, somebody captured that. That's been all over YouTube. We just needed to capture it. Because, you know, I don't know that the CBS affiliate in Denver is necessarily going to highlight that. We can do it for them.
Right, and we have a gal here in Colorado named Kelly Maher, and she has a company called RevealingPolitics.com.
Oh.
And I believe that was one of her videos, but she goes to public events like that and public meetings and just takes video, and you definitely end up with some great little gems like that. And Diana DeGette also famously, I believe it was in that same meeting, said that when we don't have to worry about having too many magazines or too much ammunition, because once they're gone, they're gone. And it was almost like she thought that the magazine, once the ammo was out of the magazine, then it was no longer usable. So it just showed how little she knew about firearms. But you're right. You know, people having cameras in these sorts of places gives us these gems that make such wonderful fodder for these social media venues.
Well, a lot of things. One thing that comes to mind is a lot of places, you know, I had an occasion to be in a courthouse back home early in the month, and yet there's a sign right out front, no cell phones with video cameras allowed. There's a lot of places now where you just can't go if you've got a cell phone with video. That's unfortunate, I guess, for that particular, I could understand maybe why it would be, well, no, I guess I can't, why wouldn't they allow cell phone video, in
Paul,
these places?
Paul, you might, I think you know the answer. There are some criminal proceedings. If you have a rape victim, you could intimidate her to not testify if she thought she was going to be videoed. Separate from the, and that makes sense, that we want to protect the victim of crime. On the other hand, there are a lot of politicians who will hide behind that. I think we should see how well that, how effective that prosecution goes. I mean, the NSA and my local police are recording information from me all the time. Why do they have the rights to record and I don't?
Yep, yep. And I would like to thank the NSA for being my backup recorder for these.
That's great.
If my Skype recorder doesn't work, I can always, you know, call them up and say, hey. But if I could then, this again, it goes away from guns a little bit, other than you see a lot of gun people doing it. What do you think of the recent being the last few years, proliferation of people recording police and some police getting rather irate about them being recorded? Is that, I guess, who's watching the watchers is another aspect of this.
You know, I'm a big fan of First Amendment means all of the pieces of the First Amendment. And if a government employee in the form of a police officer is respecting the rights of the citizens and he's being recorded, that's fine. And I've seen some actually fabulous videos on YouTube of police officers who are handling concealed carry holders in the exact way that they should be. And, you know, part of it is, okay, well, can the cops really do their jobs if there are these cameras? But I think that it's far outweighed by the benefits of making sure that our government officials in the form of, you know, whatever form they're in, and in this case police officers, are doing their jobs.
Yeah, I spoke to a law enforcement officer yesterday. I was helping a friend move. He had this comment. A number of laws are written for special circumstances. The context of where that law applies can often be stretched. And he said, look, he said, you know, I could do a no-knock warrant on any guy on parole at 4 a.m. But that's ridiculous. I try to use the minimal amount of intrusion that I think is absolutely necessary. He goes, it's literally not even if I will be prosecuted. It's my department will get enough feedback from the community that those privileges will be taken away from me if I misuse them. So there's the legal aspect. And Laura, it's back in your court. It's the political aspect. If we make enough of a ruckus, we'll get our government, our local government and our politicians to apply force, not force, to apply political pressure to make our government responsive to us again and act responsibly.
Right. And, you know, I try to think of it in terms of other places than Colorado, because in Colorado we have 55 of 64 sheriffs who are supporting law-abiding gun owners.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget that just up the road in Denver, if you are under the jurisdiction of Denver Police Department, That police chief isn't as pro-gun as we are from a standpoint of us normal, ordinary citizens owning firearms. And so, and I think that's why I like to look at it from the standpoint of protecting our rights. And if it's embarrassing or uncomfortable for law enforcement to have a camera there, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we're coming up close to the end of the segment here, and I want to take some time here real quick if I could. Laura, the elections are coming up September 10th. I'm guessing there that people need to be involved yet before the elections. If this is anything like a normal election, there's going to be need for advertising. There's going to be need for that. How can people get involved in Colorado?
Okay, great. So we have there are two campaigns going on. I'm not affiliated with either of them. The one in Colorado Springs is Bernie Herpin, is the Republican running. He's a retired Navy, and I served with him on the board of Pikes Peak Firearms Coalition. He's a great guy. And he can be found at BernieHerpin.com. And then in Pueblo, the candidate there is George Rivera. And looking right now, I am not seeing George's website right off, but folks can Google it and find him. It's George Rivera. Here's the interesting thing from a financial standpoint, and I'll be brief. People defending against a recall can raise unlimited amounts of money because it's an issue committee. People running for office are bound by our campaign finance laws, and they can only raise $200. So while Morrison Heron can get however much from Bloomberg, these guys are limited to 200 a person. So if all of your listeners could send these guys something, it would be very, very helpful.
Wow. 200 bucks to run for office? You can't run for dog catcher in my town for that.
Yeah, it's technically, in a normal situation, $400, which would be 200 for primary and 200 for general. But since this is just one election, it's just $200. So it's I don't like our campaign finance laws here in Colorado, obviously.
Laura, would you underline that again? So it's an asymmetric situation in the same race, two candidates running against each other. Because one is being recalled, he can spend unlimited amount. His opponent is limited by campaign finance laws?
Correct. And it's the technicality lies in the fact that there are two ballot questions. One, should the senator be recalled? And then two, should he be replaced with this person or this person? Now, for example, George and Bernie, and if they have Democrat opponents, those people will be equally bound by the $200 limit. But the people being recalled, since theirs is an issue committee, won't be bound by contribution limits. Yeah.
Wow. That fact needs to be spread far and wide.
Yep.
So
we are definitely talking about that.
Just to be, and then again, not to belabor the point, but I want to be absolutely clear: is this $200 they're allowed to raise? In other words, if Laura Carner were to want to donate some money to a candidate, she can donate $200, or they can get $200 in donations. Period.
Per donor. So good clarification. Each of us could send $200, and that's the max.
Okay. All righty. So
sounds like all the Colorado gun organizations need to stand up and have a couple thousand donations of $200 each.
Exactly. And now other side organizations can raise larger amounts of money and spend larger amounts of money. So and I'm talking to donors right now to see if we can raise some larger amounts of money to educate folks on the records of these two senators. So we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Well, and then everybody, I know you're not going to plug it, Laura, but I will for you. Everybody go to IamCreatedEqual.com. That's Laura's website. And Rob, at least as far as last evening, you still had some, you were putting out, and we're going to go over time because I want to touch on this. And it's not gun related, but, it's big in the news, and that is Detroit filed bankruptcy.
And
well, hey, before we do, you only mentioned Laura's website. You didn't mention her on Facebook.
Absolutely.
There you go.
I'm everywhere.
Yeah. I don't personally use Twitter that much, but I believe you even have a Twitter account, don't you, Laura?
I do. I'm at Laura Carno or at Am Equal on Twitter. I'm easy to find.
Okay. So we're gonna head out a little bit over time. Rob, this comes directly off your blog, Slavery in Detroit. The state and city administrations in Detroit went ahead and made the step that everybody knew they were going to have to make, and that was to file bankruptcy because the population has dropped precipitously over the past 30 years, and there's no money there to pay the retirees, and yet everything's still being enforced as the way those extremely liberal administrations kicked it through 30 years ago. And you had a great post that it's called Slavery in Detroit. Could I ask you to talk about that just a little bit?
Sure. You've watched a city crumble. Detroit was the city and county of in which Detroit rests were once the richest county in America. Richer than Westchester, New York, richer than Hollywood, California, richer than Fairfield, Connecticut, with all of its investment bankers coming in and out of the city. Because the average employee had a very good paying job in a booming automobile industry and all the subsidiary industries that supported it.
Mm-hmm.
They killed the goose that laid the golden egg. The jobs left. The people that left Detroit didn't leave it because they didn't like it, like the snow. They left because there was no longer a way to earn a living in that city. A bunch of politicians made promises. They said, I'll gladly give you political favors now and tax you tomorrow. Sounds like something right out of Popeye and a promise for a hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today is the tomorrow where they promised. And what's embarrassing is I think it's probably the municipal unions found a judge who said, I'm sorry, citizens, you made a promise, you have to pay up. You may have never lived in Detroit when those promises were made, but we own you. No matter what, you must pay. What's bizarre is this judge is saying that there are half of the properties in Detroit have been abandoned, and people obviously don't pay property taxes on abandoned buildings. So
right.
Where does she possibly think the money will come from? I did get one comment on that post. A lawyer said, to shorten and paraphrase, he said, well, it's legal.
Wow.
Doesn't make it right.
Right, counselor. It's legal to put debts on the future. You know, that's still slavery no matter how you slice it. Slavery was legal in the United States. Atrocities are often legal. They're just never moral.
Yeah.
Well said.
At one point, even the Supreme Court said that a black person was 3/5 of a white person, and black,
yeah.
And slavery was legal at one point. It was never right.
Not a proud moment in our history, is it?
So, okay.
Paul, let me toss in a pitch for California before we go.
Absolutely.
If I understand that the legislature is temporarily out of session, that doesn't mean we're safe. Our civil rights are still under threat. If you're a California gun owner, and I would enlarge this to say if you're a gun activist in any state, you want to be part of the NRA and your local gun organizations. In California, that's the California Rifle and Pistol Association, Gun Owners of California, and Cal Guns.
I especially want to plug Cal Guns. They've been on the show before. They are great people, and they are doing fantastic work. And then their work at Cal Guns affects more than just California.
It does indeed.
So, but I think this is a great place to set this aside again. Rob, thank you for coming on. And everybody, Rob's Slow Facts blog It's at slowfacts.wordpress.com. It's all, as always, it's linked up on every show he's on with us, and it's also permanently linked on the right side of on the blog roll on politicsandguns.com. Laura Carno, IamCreatedEqual.com. I believe I have you linked up in the blog roll over there on the right side of I am, of politicsandguns.com. I want to thank you both for joining us, and we'll be back to wrap the show up right after this.
Joining us again, Gary with ABN Army Surplus. Gary, there's a lot of special events coming up. What have you guys got going at ABN?
Well, we had some interesting changes this year. One of the things is that we acquired an old military 1986 M1031A, a military contact maintenance truck. And as we acquired it, started fixing it up, we started getting invited to parades and car shows and that kind of thing. We've been traveling throughout Minnesota and South Dakota, those events already, and we got a wide variety of things coming up. A few that I want to mention because I think folks might want to travel some distance to come along.
Okay.
First and foremost, on August 17th, Saturday night, we are hosting the Icebreaker for the National Enlisted Man's Conference. Now, enlisted men from across the country join this association when they're active military. And then once a year, somewhere in the United States, they have a big conference where these guys all come together to talk about issues having to do with being enlisted in the military. That conference is in Sioux Falls, starts Sunday morning the 18th, and Saturday evening between the American Legion and us, we are hosting a giant street party down here and in honor of those guys coming in. And every soldier, every veteran, every regular family that wants to come on down, we're going to have food, we're going to have music, we're going to have games, and have a lot of activities for a very special night. That's going to be August 17th.
Awesome. Okay.
The following weekend, on the 24th and the 25th at the Empire Fairgrounds in Sioux Falls, is going to be what they call Freedom Bird 2013. Now, that is a welcome home Vietnam vets, welcome home veterans from everywhere events. 2 days, very family-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Boy Scouts are going to be out there showing Boy Scout skills. There's going to be a lot of activities. There's going to be Rainbow Systems is coming out and putting up one of their jungle gyms.
Very cool.
The National Guard is coming out with some of their stuff for kids. So we have a whole variety of things happening Saturday and Sunday. Food, games, events, booths, things for people to do and see. And it's all around the idea of the entire Upper Midwest having an opportunity to say thank you to the veterans for the job they've done, and that's going to be August 24th and 25th.
Very cool.
Then the third one I'd really like folks to know about as well is on Saturday, September 14th, here at ABN. That's going to be this year's Customer Appreciation Day. So we'd like anybody who's been a customer, and we've got thousands of them, thankfully, thinks they want to become a customer, to come on down that Saturday. We're going to be serving free food, free soda pop. There's going to be specials in the store all day long. So Saturday, September 14th is going to be Customer Appreciation Day. So those are three real big events coming up for us. We'd like to invite everybody to participate in.
Sure. And I'd like to add that almost every day is a special day. You can come in, you can sit down, grab a free cup of coffee, sit down at the table, and right. Just shoot the breeze. No buying things required.
No buying things required. We set up a little coffee corner here, latter part of last year, put a coffee pot on. We got a television, up and running. Usually it's on Fox News. Oftentimes some of the old vets who come in. Sometimes World War II. We had a 90-year-old World War II veteran in the other day that it had been in the, United States Marine Corps.
Wow.
Retired Marine, and I'll tell you, this crotchety old guy was a man to be reckoned with. He had earned, he had earned every stripe and ribbon on his chest, and it was a joy. But we get a lot of old veterans, active duty soldiers, police and fire guys, and a lot of customers that have become friends just by coming in, having a cup of coffee, sitting down, watching the news, arguing a little politics. Like you said, you don't have to buy anything to come in to ABN Army Surplus. You just need to come in.
Awesome. If you're looking for ABN, you can call them at 605-357-8855. Or, like we've been saying, stop by the store. It's just west of West Avenue in Sioux Falls. Look for the big American flag. It's one building west of there. It's right by the American Legion.
Hey, and welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the Politics Roundtable. Toby, there's one thing while we get to start the process of closing down the show here, I wanted to just touch on. I posted a story this morning up on Politics and Guns Podcast Facebook page, and I'll be posting another one here as soon as we finish recording. But it's gotten a lot of comments. And that's a story of a young lady that was in her kitchen, seen somebody pointing a gun at her, and dropped to the floor. I would think that's a smart move. And crawled to her where she kept her firearm. She had a revolver, and a police standoff ensued. Now, this person has no criminal record, and no shots were fired. Thank God. Everything came to a peaceful ending, but, you know, I'm seeing a lot of this, you know, the no-knock warrants honestly, the SWAT teams are getting a bit out of control.
Well, you know, we've been seeing more and more stories to that effect, and that's concerning. Now, hopefully these are very isolated incidences, and with the, you know, tens of thousands of encounters civilians have with law enforcement every day, hopefully this is not the norm. But it does give you some pause for concern. You know, there was another story you were just telling me about, and it was titled Rise of the Warrior Cop.
Yep.
And right there in the title, I mean, you know, cops aren't meant to go to war. They're law enforcement. You know, I mean, they usually says on the side of the cruiser to serve and protect their public servants.
Right.
And, you know, they're there to draw the line between, you know, the criminals and, well, they call it the thin blue line between the criminals and the rest of the law-abiding society. But, you know, we have very separate distinctions between our military and our law enforcement. I've said this before. Our military is to defend the country from external threats, you know, threats to the state. The law enforcement is to protect the citizens. And when you start mixing the two, then the citizens can start looking like the enemies.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, we are not supposed to have a standing army in the United States. And this, with all the SWAT teams, especially with them getting these army, they're not tanks, but they're all right next to armored personnel carriers, the full geared up, you stand a SWAT officer next to a Marine. Other than that, the police is wearing black, the Marine is wearing camo, there's not a heck of a lot of difference there.
No, and I'm all about how, you know, our law enforcement having, you know, the proper gear to, you know, perform their duties and to protect themselves. So don't get me wrong on that. But, you know, there again, I mean, we're starting to change that mindset. Like I said, it's, you know, it's the warrior cop. It's, you know, they're losing their identity as public servants.
Right. You know, whatever when I was growing up, and admittedly, I mean, I got a lot of my information off television, but you know, when, even on television, when I was growing up, what were the police that were on TV? Well, there was, the Mayberry, you know, was a huge thing. And that was the main character was a sheriff, but it wasn't absolute, you know, your neighbor type of person. The other cop shows were not, I mean, you didn't get on TV, you didn't get dynamic entries, and, you know, things like CSI and the gritty cop shows, the NYPD Blues, which is no longer around, but the everything was you know, the policeman was your neighbor, was your, and you'd go out and have beer with him, you know?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I've said, you know, I live in a small town, and our town law enforcement lives just a couple houses away from me. You know, and it's easy to forget how that can be in the big cities, you know, where you don't really have a chance to get to know your local law enforcement. But, you know, it things have changed over times. And, you know, over the times, you know, it's gotten pretty rough out there. I understand that. But, wow, it's just, you know, maybe we need to start paying more attention to these things and just, you know, having, you know, getting to know our local law enforcement and, you know, letting them put a face to the people, and, vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I will say one thing about this, and we've covered this a little bit in the past, but, these no-knock warrants have got to end. And simply because it's too easy to make a mistake. And,
you mean like the wrong address?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And, you know, let's go back to looking at the Fourth Amendment here, folks. You know, one of the stories, and I just linked it up on Facebook, so it's going to be out there by the time this releases. There are a couple stories in that Wall Street Journal article. One guy was growing 18 marijuana plants in his basement. 18 plants. That sounds like personal consumption to me. It does not sound like he's selling. And yet he got a full SWAT team treatment. There's another in that same story. A guy was making bets on college football and was having a poker night at his house. They had a SWAT raid.
Ooh, sounds like a threat to society there.
Yeah, a SWAT. Now, both those are misdemeanors. You would think it would have to be, at the very least, you want to do a no-knock raid, it better be a violent felony, and there better be people in danger right now at this time. We've got a Fourth Amendment for a reason.
Oh, we still have a Constitution left?
Yeah, well, not if you listen to Obama, but yeah. Yeah, so, but yeah, please go over. I'm not going to do what I normally do and read these articles on the air because we're already going long. But this is something that I think I'm going to be paying a lot more attention to myself. And you'll probably hear more about on the show. So, and don't think I'm anti-law enforcement. I'm not. And law enforcement's got an extremely difficult job to do. However, they do not need to be a military. We've got one. So.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, and this is, like I said, this is not to say that this is hopefully a daily occurrence because, knowing law enforcement personnel personally, it's a thankless job. You know, I mean, firefighters are always heralded as the heroes, and I've had friends say that, you know, they don't understand why law enforcement doesn't get that same treatment, but, you know, firefighters don't usually give tickets, so, you know, a lot of times, our interaction with law enforcement is for something, you know, less pleasant, like getting a speeding ticket, but imagine a world without law enforcement, you know, it would be pretty scary. They do keep a lot of the less than desirable people in society from preying upon everybody. So they definitely have their place. But yes, I think we need to examine how they're being militarized and if that's actually appropriate.
Yep. Yep. Well, let's start shutting this down because we've gotten a little long here, as usual.
And it sounds like your Facebook's busy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That, and believe it or not, that is something we are going to be talking about, I'm thinking, in about a week or two. And, folks, it's huge. I cannot wait to make the announcement that is currently exploding on my Facebook because of a private message conversation that's going on between several of us. But, wow, I can't wait. This is going to be exciting. But for right now, let's do our normal list of the other shows on the Gun Rights Radio Network, including Ken Kowalski, our buddy, has a new Rimfire podcast out.
Woohoo! About damn time, Ken.
I'm telling you. Holy cow. I can't wait to talk about this. Man, I can't wait to talk about this. I wish I could now, but I can't. As well, listen to our friends up north on the Canadian Reload Radio Network. Even Brian, you know, he's he whines a lot, but give them a listen. Listen to Slamfire Radio.
Also along those lines, if you want to hear the Ferlate, Trevor, like you've almost never heard him before, listen to Radio Velocity Quebec. He's on there. It's almost all. It's like 45 minutes of what Trevor did in Guns in French.
I'll pass.
It was good. I enjoyed it. They were cracking me up. I couldn't understand what they were saying, but I was laughing my ass off. Seriously, dude, I'm telling you, I'm enjoying it.
You know, you have you played with marbles for a very, very long time as a kid, I'm guessing. It doesn't take much to entertain you.
No, we were too poor to afford marbles. I was lucky to find the loose one on the street. No, I do enjoy this show. It's I don't speak French, but it's entertaining to listen to anyways. Like I said, turn it into a drinking game.
There you go. All right. So we need to remind people to join the NRA, join the Second Amendment Foundation, join Gun Owners of America. You need to be members of two of the three, as well as your local and state advocacy groups. And we've got the Gun Rights Policy Conference coming up in September. You need to go to that. If you can, it is free, and they feed you twice. The only thing you need to do is pay for the rest of your meals and pay for your travel in your room. Everything else is covered. It's totally free. And last year they gave out about $125 of books worth of books for attending.
Now, what kind of people or what people could they expect to meet there? Well, besides you,
I guarantee I'll be there. I guarantee you, Rob Morse will be there. Frank Fiamingo will be there. I don't think he's going to make it this year, but last year David Kudrea was there. Last year, Mark O'Meara, the attorney, one of George Zimmerman's attorneys, was there, and he spoke. Of course, Alan Gottlieb is there every year. He is the president of the Second Amendment Foundation. And just, I mean, the caliber of the people there. Honestly, I'm gonna go not so much for the talks, but for the people that I meet and talk to while I'm there. It is out of this world. I could not believe the amount of conversation that I didn't get most of it recorded last year. It was there was just so much of it, and I was trying to absorb everything. You know, it was almost indescribable. It was for the gun rights side. It is what SHOT Show is for the gun side.
Okay, well, that puts it in perspective. Excellent.
And let's see here. One more announcement on the Kathy Jackson area. For the Kathy Jackson Sioux Falls class, we had another cancellation. We now have two slots open for the September class, and that's going to be on September 14th and 15th. And I think that covers all the announcements and all the reminders we have to give out.
I think you got it covered.
So why don't we go ahead and set this one aside, Toby? Everybody, until next week, stay safe.
Be aware.
And we'll see you down the road.
And opinions on the show you just heard are those of the host and the guest and are not necessarily the views of any sponsors or other affiliations. But hey, not everyone is as smart as we are.